This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. This time of year seems a pretty good time to thank our U.S. servicemen and women, active and veterans. But there's a reason to thank them you may not be aware of, and it could be on your table this Thursday.
Army food is no longer a matter of beans and guesswork. Since the last war, nutrition has become a science, and our Army Quartermaster Corps uses that science in planning Army meals. Food correctly used means fighting strength for our soldiers and better health for civilians.
That's a newsreel from the 1940s. Did you know many things we eat today were actually first developed for soldiers? That influence is especially felt in Southern food. Food writer Anastasia Marx de Saucedo joined us to talk about her book, Combat Ready Kitchen, How the U.S. Military Shapes the Way You Eat. I also checked in with Brunswick farmer Matthew Rayford, who's an Army veteran. Anastasia began by telling me why she wanted to explore the military's influence on the food we eat.
Oh, well, I have a little story about that, which is I'm a mom, and I pack a lot of lunches. And so one day, as I was putting together my daughter's school lunches, I got to thinking about the foods in them. You know, I had what I considered to be the healthy things, a sandwich, some carrot sticks and some grapes, and then the little less but child-pleasing things like the energy bar, a juice pouch, and some goldfish. And I started getting to thinking about the ingredients in the sandwich, and I said, these really probably aren't fresher or healthier than the things in packages. And then I started to do research on how the long shelf life was achieved for each of the items, each of the ingredients in the sandwich. And I found this reference to this obscure U.S. Army base, the Natick Soldier System Center. And I started to research on the Natick Center, and I found that it had been very deeply involved in 20th century processed food and now in the 21st.
So we're going to talk about some of the specific foods that you're talking about here. But Matthew, let me go to you as well, because you were in the military. What was your particular thing that you were always trading to get?
Well, I was that peaches and cream guy. I like peach cobbler, you know, so the closest I could get to it was to kind of add the peaches with the creamer from the coffee and whatever crackers I could and put it in, and as I hydrate it, it would become kind of like this mushy cobbler taste with the sugar packet.
You're talking about the powdered creamer, right?
Yes, the powdered creamer, yeah.
Oh, that does not sound appetizing, but... Anastasia, let me go back to you. Give us some examples of some foods that were first developed for the military and are now part of our everyday diet.
Oh, there are. I actually, in the book, at a certain point, I give a tour of the supermarket and I remove any item that has a military influence or origin. And at the end, I estimate that the store would be half empty.
Wow.
So it's pretty broad. I mean, you can start even in the produce section where those packaged greens and salads that you get are kept fresh using something called modified atmosphere packaging, which was developed to send produce to Vietnam. You can move on into the meat section where the Army actually was the first entity to cut meat off the bone at the point of slaughter and box it up. And then that actually happened in the First and Second World Wars. And then, you know, 40 years later, the Army developed a new form of animal protein, which is something called restructured meat. And those are basically the cheaper bits of meat stuck together with meat glue. And that became a staple in fast food restaurants. It's what the McRib is, and has also infiltrated the supermarket in the freezer section and the refrigerated section.
And Cheetos has a military grade, literally a military grade powder on it, right?
Yeah, the Cheeto is coated with cheese powder, and dehydrated cheese powder was developed during World War II because they were trying to reduce the weight and volume of food shipped overseas. They pretty much dehydrated everything, and when they got to cheese, because cheese doesn't have an internal structure, it just collapsed and turned into a powder. After the war, the little industry that had sprung up to create this dehydrated cheese powder then turned to the grocery manufacturers, and they soon began to manufacture convenience foods and snack items such as the Cheeto.
Or is that the same as the powder that's in Kraft macaroni and cheese?
I think it is.
I would think so. So, Matthew, you actually took one of the things you learned from military food, and that was meat preservation, did you not?
Yes. So the MAP process that that Anastasia was just talking about is one of the ways that we actually do some of our food here with sous vide. So basically what we do is we take those items, we season them, and then we put them in in a machine that actually vacuum seals the bag. Then we take that bag and drop it down into water, depending on what the degrees that we're trying to cook the item in, and cook it that way. And then when we're getting ready to actually do the service, we take that item out of that package, sear it off, and then serve it.
I mean, I find it interesting, Matthew, that you have referred to the ways in which you've become a more creative cook because of having been in the military.
Right, because there was always improvise, adapt, and overcome. That was always, I mean, that's one of the service mottos, right? So, you know, this is what you have. This is all the space you have to work it in. I think Anastasia just talked about the fact of, you know, they couldn't ship all of this food because of the weight. So how do we dehydrate it? How do we make it smaller? So,
yeah, pull the moisture out.
Yeah, you know.
Well, I mean, I know I was engaged to a man who he used to do his cooking on the back of his tank because the exhaust is so hot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've done it many a times. I have warmed up beef stew that was inside and warmed it up off the back of the Bradley.
That's actually an excellent point because the military really has been the source of many food science innovations during the 20th century. And we can talk about things like freeze drying, so that gives you your coffee, food irradiation, which consumers didn't really like, but is used now routinely on spices and herbs. Something called intermediate moisture foods, which are kind of had all those soft and chewy bakery items that we eat. And right on up to the turn of the 21st century, when the military, working with a consortium of big companies, developed something called high pressure processing. I don't know if you're familiar with this, Matt, where you use all this pressure to kill the microbes inside food.
Microbes inside. Mm-hmm.
And people now buy as the refrigerated guacamole you can get at the supermarket, those single portion juices and smoothies, and many deli meat items.
So another thing that you mentioned, talk about in your book, and you kind of go into detail about it, is the development of active dry yeast, which I cannot imagine how people baked before they had that. How did this come about?
Yeah, that's actually a great story. And it was one of the things I was going to sort of mention for your listeners is there's actually a lot of items that we home cooks use that come from the military, and active dry yeast is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Until World War II, yeast had to be fresh, and because yeast is a live organism, and it was sold in moist compressed cakes that had to be refrigerated, and they only lasted for up to 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, the Army actually had a special unit of bakers who prepared bread in overseas camps, and it was very difficult to obtain local yeast. So the Quartermaster Corps began to research.
Oh, right, because they couldn't ship it.
Right, exactly. So they began to research how to preserve, basically to put yeast into a state of suspended animation, and they figured out a way that that involved a very long, slow drying that didn't stress the yeast organisms too much, and then they were able to rehydrate them months later and turn them into bread.
It's like they're putting the yeast to sleep because they can't kill it or it won't work.
Right.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
But Matthew, to a certain extent, all these things that she's talking about are kind of the opposite of what you do now with your life. They're talking about how to keep food and make it last, and you're all about fresh food.
Well, you know, how about this, though? Part of having fresh food, right, is having it seasonally. And how do you eat a tomato in the middle of winter? Well, what do? You make marinara. You make stewed tomatoes. And what do? You do canning. So preservation of food and preserving food is still a part of eating fresh food.
Some of the things that the Army is working on now is they're trying to get a little fresher. What are some of the interesting developments going on in the military now with food?
The influence that the military had on processed foods after World War II, there was this core set of values that I mentioned, that they be imperishable, durable, affordable, and appeal to this broad range of palates. As you know, time has gone on, we've become much more aware of some of the health impacts of eating foods that have, to achieve those things, a lot of chemical preservatives or additional ingredients such as stabilizers, emulsifiers, and thickeners, which aren't really good for us. And so the Army, to its credit, is also moving in the same direction as consumers in seeking more healthful food. And it's worked to eliminate trans fats, reduce salt and sugar, and looking for ways to create a fresher and more nutritious product, even doing such things as sort of encapsulating, or microencapsulation of protein and other things so that those things stay fresh, even if a food is stored for 3 years.
Okay, so Matthew, before we go, there is one thing out of the sea rats I kind of miss. They had these little circular chocolates with crispy rice in them that I still to this day kind of crave. And I'm wondering if there is anything from your MREs that you would eat again if you could.
You know, funny you say that. I always liked the beans that were in there.
Were they, they were refried or?
No, they were like these like baked beans, and I would actually use the hot sauce that she was just talking about. I love those beans.
That's Army veteran and Brunswick farmer Matthew Rayford. We also heard from Anastasia Marx de Salcedo. She's the author of Combat Ready Kitchen, How the U.S. Military Shapes the Way You Eat.